It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Today I spoke to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about a proposed bill that would make significant changes to our social welfare system. We then talked about the controversy surrounding Amazon receiving $100 million in funding from the government for their Lord of the Rings series. And lastly, we spoke about Green's relationship with unions and their dedication to workers' rights.
The Green Party recently put a members' bill into the ballot which would overhaul the Social Security Act. How does it intend to achieve this?
So there's actually two bills, one of which is has actually just been drawn, and it's an amendment to the Social Security Act rather than a full overhaul. But it is very important because what it does is it changes the mandate of the welfare system from just helping to alleviate hardship, which is what the Act says at the moment, to eliminating hardship. You have to wonder why it is that we have a Social Security Act that sort of says, well, actually, some hardship's okay. So there's that. And also, the idea is to embed a tikanga Māori framework into the welfare system. So there's that. And then there's a much longer-term project that we're working on, which is actually for a rewrite of the legislation, including a guaranteed minimum income.
So why is it so important to use this language of eliminating hardship rather than helping to alleviate hardship?
Yeah, look, I know it seems like a small semantic change, but because it's a legal, it's the law, right? It's a legal instrument. And so what that does is it essentially directs our agencies and the Ministry for Social Development, most importantly, to change the focus from one of merely trying to alleviate hardship to actually eliminating it. And so you can imagine that there would be, if you were running MSD, right, and somebody said, actually, your job now is to eliminate hardship rather than just alleviate it, that would actually change the way that you think about all of your policy settings, right, and the way that you kind of work. So those kinds of changes in law actually are quite significant. Then the way that parliamentary democracy works is you do these annual reviews and you have to go up in front of select committee and kind of justify how you're spending taxpayer money against the objectives that have been set out for you in the legislation. So there is some accountability for then delivering on eliminating hardship.
Right, so it obliges them to hold themselves to a higher standard, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and not just a higher standard, but actually an objective that says that, actually, why do we tolerate poverty? There's no particular need for it in, what is a comparatively wealthy OECD country. It's just a set of the choices that we've made over many decades to the point where actually we just kind of tolerate it. But actually we could set ourselves the goal of eliminating poverty entirely if we so chose.
So Ricardo Menendez March has said that the bill will incorporate a couple of recommendations from the Welfare Expert Advisory Group's 2019 report. What are these recommendations and how will they be implemented?
Well, this is exactly it. I think it's actually, from memory, the first two recommendations of the Welfare Expert Advisory Group were to change the mandate, change the language that's in the Act from just merely trying to alleviate hardship to eliminating it. And the other one was to embed the tikanga Māori framework into the welfare system.
Yeah, so you've expressed a desire to embed tikanga Māori into the legislation. What sort of form does this embedding take?
Well, I guess the important thing is that, this Act was written really in an era where we had we hadn't prioritised Te Tiriti o Waitangi. We're still very early on in the evolution of kind of developing solutions by Māori for Māori and so on. It's the entire kind of structure of the service delivery was established at a time. I mean, it has evolved, but it was really sort of established at a time when there was a very monocultural Pākehā view of the world, and that everyone kind of had to conform to that. But actually, that tends to exacerbate the problem rather than make it better. So, so if you sort of incorporate that at the high level principles, then again, just like it does with the other change to eliminating hardship, it changes the policy mix and the design of the services that get delivered by the ministry and other and related ministries.
Why are these sorts of cultural considerations particularly important for social welfare?
Well, and not exclusively for social welfare, right? I mean, we're having similar debates in the domain of health and the justice and correction system and so on. And, you know, ultimately, if, you know, this is sort of well trodden. I mean, everybody knows that Māori are particularly poorly reflected in a lot of the statistics to do with things like, you know, incomes, victimization of crime, imprisonment rates, you know, health outcomes, and so on. And a significant part of that is because the services that are designed to support the population aren't particularly culturally competent. You know, they're not, they don't sort of take account of Māori culture and values and traditions particularly strongly.
So next I want to ask you for your thoughts on the recent controversy with Amazon. What is the Green Party's position on the government providing a $100 million boost to Amazon's Lord of the Rings project?
Well, I mean, it's really unfortunate, right? Because that is money that could well go to, you know, a million other things than Jeff Bezos, who, you know, seems to have plenty of money already. And the issue is that there are loads of countries around the world that offer significant tax breaks for film production. And so you're in this kind of downward competitive spiral to try and attract this business to New Zealand. So it's one of those things where if we didn't do it, then, you know, it would be pretty easy to foresee the significant downscaling of our kind of film and TV business and related industries. And actually Australia tried to do this. They kind of, you know, got rid of their film subsidies, and they saw a total collapse of their industry there. And so they're actually now bringing them back. So, you know, these are industries that they do employ a lot of people here in New Zealand. They do have kind of ancillary benefits into, the, you know, arts and other, you know, other related industries. They do generate significant tourism uplift for the country. So, for example, prior to COVID, about 20% of all visitors who came to New Zealand cited the Hobbit movies as a factor that influenced them to come, right? So it's sort of one of these things where we're really stuck between a rock and a hard place, but it's going to be very difficult for us to move on this until there's some kind of international agreement between countries to stop undercutting each other and putting, you know, what is hundreds of millions of dollars into the pockets of Hollywood movie moguls.
While Amazon bringing their business to New Zealand would certainly provide jobs, do you believe that the negatives of their presence, particularly their history of eroding workers' rights in various countries, would do more harm than good?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Green Party has been really firm, in particular, actually, in relation to the film industry, to say over the course of, you know, several decades, ever since the this kind of blew up around the Lord of the Rings 20 years ago, that actually it is an industry that is, you know, geared towards exploiting a lot of people, and the structure of the industry doesn't work for most people. I guess the conclusion that the Ministry of Economic Development has come to is that on balance, it is better to have those jobs here in New Zealand and so on. So, and that includes, by the way, you know, New Zealand actors and crew and all of those other businesses that go along with it, like, you know, I don't know, hotels, cars, truck and van hires, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it is significant. And I guess the question is, It's a fair question, and that's why we've been a bit critical of it.
Chloe Swarbrick has criticised Stuart Nash's desire to, quote-unquote, build a relationship with Amazon. Why is that?
Because we're not just talking about Amazon Prime, which is the TV and film production company and the streaming service of Amazon. It also flows into other businesses as well that Amazon have got an interest in. Obviously, you know, Amazon have got very significant IT businesses, some of which are providing significant government services and so on for, you know, data storage and processing and so on. And the reason that Chloe has been critical of it is because there's a sense here that we're, you know, favouriting one company that's astonishingly well-resourced to start with using taxpayer money. And I think it's a fair criticism.
What is the Green Party doing to maintain and ensure the protection of workers' rights within New Zealand?
Well, recently we signed or re-signed our renewed a memorandum of understanding that we have with the E2 Union, which is a multi-year arrangement that we've had with them. And we've been very strong supporters you know, both when we're in opposition and in government, in trying to, you know, pressure government to ensure that every time a decision comes up which affects employees and working people and working families, that we, you know, try and underpin those rights.
Yeah, so this memorandum of understanding with Air2, could you outline what a memorandum of understanding is in this case?
Well, I mean, it basically says that we will cooperate and keep open lines of communication. And, you know, we've had a pretty close relationship with the union movement, recognising, of course, that their primary relationship is with the Labour Party, which is the political wing of the union movement in Parliament. But we've, you know, sought to work very closely with the unions over the years because, you know, as we keep saying, you know, the same system that causes the environmental crisis is also behind deepening inequality and persistent poverty in New Zealand. And the unions have had a really essential role in ensuring that, you know, workers can have better conditions, ensuring that all of us can live with dignity and so on. And so, you know, the intention here is to continue to work with them closely in that regard.
This illustrates to me that the Green Party is very supportive of the notion of maintaining strong unions within our various industries. Why are unions so important in your eyes?
Well, if you look back at the history of the 20th century, it was really the union movement that ensured that people had, you know, sick leave, that they got paid minimum wages, that they had decent reasonable hours, safer working conditions, and so on. And so, you know, in kind of every aspect of New Zealand society and actually around the world, you know, effective unions have actually helped to improve the living conditions of the whole population.
So what sorts of relationships does the Green Party want to maintain with not just the Air2 Union, but with unions in general across the country?
Well, I mean, we maintain, you know, these kinds of relationships with most of the major unions and, of course, with the Council of Trade Unions. So really it's a matter of, you know, like I said, keeping open lines of communication, understanding what the hot button issues are that they're dealing with it at any particular time, keeping them abreast of some of the stuff that we're dealing with, and where it makes sense, working together to campaign for improvements to people's conditions.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.